it's a conversation where both people are talking at once. That's amazing, you know. And you make something that's bigger than just the sum of its parts, and that's just, it's uncanny and beautiful, and you know, I don't know if I'd even still be alive without music. So there you go.
Hi, you're listening to Conversations with Musicians with Leah Roseman, which I hope inspires you through the personal stories of a fascinating diversity of musical guests. Daryl Anger is an acoustic music legend, known as much for his innovative fiddle style beyond bluegrass and jazz traditions, and his teaching. Daryl has helped drive the evolution of the contemporary string band through his involvement with numerous pathbreaking ensembles, such as the Turtle Island String Quartet, the David Grisman Quintet, and his current touring group, Mr. Sun. This podcast episode is being released a few days before his new two-album set, Diary of a Fiddler No. 2, The Empty Nest, and you'll be hearing many clips from this brilliant collaborative project that features dozens of phenomenal string players and improvisers. You'll find the titles and performers from these clips in the timestamps, and please go over to Bandcamp and buy this album, which you'll find linked in the show notes. You'll find some related episodes of this podcast linked for you as well, with some of the many wonderful musicians we talked about in this wide-ranging conversation. Anyone interested in the history of American acoustic music will be curious to hear Daryl's stories from his long career and his advice to students from his many years teaching at Berkeley and online at ArtistWorks. Most importantly, I'm sure you'll be inspired by Daryl's openness and generosity to musical connection. Like all my episodes, you can watch this on my YouTube channel or listen to the podcast on many podcast platforms, and I've also linked the transcript. It's a joy to bring these inspiring episodes to you every week, and I do all the many jobs of research, production, and publicity. Have a look at the show notes of this episode, where you'll find all the links, including different ways to support this podcast. Well, let me just start by saying thanks for joining me, Daryl Anger. It's just an honor to have you on the show.
Thank you for having me, Leah. This is great. You know, I don't know how we could even sell a single record without folks like you. You know, it's really, I really appreciate it. You know, people that are just interested in music to the point where they'll actually set up a camera. Pretty great.
Yeah, so this episode's going to be coming out just right before this great album is released, so we'll be focusing a lot on the album. There's lots to talk about, but I am hoping we can get to some other things. You have such a rich musical life. Right now, it's summer festival season. Are you playing some festivals?
Yes. Yes. I'm doing a lot of music camps this summer in addition to the festivals. But, you know, I'm hitting some of the big festivals like Grey Fox and Rocky Grass. And we're doing, doing the Swannanoa Gathering, which was a blast. It was really great. A lot of old friends, both in the instructor and the student population. So that was great.
So what makes a great summer festival for you?
You get to see your friends. Hopefully it doesn't rain very hard anyway. There's like a place that you can like sit. as a 72-year-old, you know, I appreciate some of the the amenities that you wouldn't necessarily notice if you were in your 20s, but it's nice. But you know, really the festivals are wonderful because you really do get to see the people that you might even live like 2 miles from and don't see most of the year, and then you have to go 500 miles away to see your neighbor. Thinking about people like Tam O'Brien and Jerry Douglas, Sam Bush, of course, and those guys that we kind of land in town and you want to hide in the house for a couple of days because you just talked to 850,000 people. So yeah, you get to see what people are doing, your friends are doing, and new people too. You know, that's great. You know, you get to kind of like, what's going on out there? You know, who's playing what, and have they got a big idea? And is it great? It might be, probably is. You know, people that are playing, people, younger people, they're just getting better and better. Every time you see them, they're just playing more stuff. Rocky Grass is going to be interesting. in that way, because Molly's band is all there, but not as Molly's band. Molly's got a new band, but Bronwyn and Lyle, both have bands at Rocky Grass, so there'll probably be some kind of reunion thing. But in the meantime, we've got this, like the molecule has split and turned into something very, much more. There's more is more, so to speak.
Well, the scene must have changed so much over your career, so maybe we'll get into some of that. But let's dive into Diary of a Fiddler, number two, The Empty Nest. So explain the title for people that don't know.
Oh, yeah. This is, in 1999, I released a record called Diary of a Fiddler. And that was a record of duets, just fiddle duets, mostly fiddle duets. There was a larger group on there, but basically duets, a couple of trios with other fiddle players, people that, famous, really good fiddle players. And, people like Stuart Duncan, Natalie McMaster, Richard Green, Martin Hayes, Alistair Fraser, Vassar Clements, folks like that, and like a bunch of these duets of just fiddles, no backing band or anything like that. So you really got to hear what fiddles can do. That was sort of in response to this, these music camps, especially fiddle camps that had just started really, hitting. And especially Mark's camp, Mark O'Connor's camp, because he had every style represented in his camp. Like everybody, it's kind of like everybody was there. And so we all got to meet and hang out and play together, and that was incredible. So that became a recording. So that was 26 years ago. This new recording is a album of mostly duets, a couple of trios, and one very large band with former students or people that I've had some kind of mentor relationship with. Often, sometimes, it's like maybe a couple of years of studying at Berkeley. I was their private, teacher. Sometimes it was just a situation where we'd meet at camps. I'd know their parents, and I might just, just say a word or two or something like that. All these folks seem to be okay with the idea that I've had some kind of mentorship relationship with them, and it's just a lovely thing to come back and all these incredible fiddle players. They're just, they were already good, usually when I met them, and I was lucky enough to get to work with them in some way. Certainly Brittany Haas, Alex Hargreaves, all these folks. Alex is playing with Billy Strings. I think most people have heard of Billy Strings. And, John Mylander, who's playing with Bruce Hornsby, Bronwyn, Keith Hines, who I just mentioned, who's playing with Molly Tuttle, many, many more folks. And, I just feel so, lucky to have worked with all these folks. So there was so much there I had to make two CDs. I just couldn't bring myself to cut anybody out. So I have a loud CD where we're playing loud and fast with a bunch of folks. And then there's a cool CD where we're playing, kind of spacey and kind of focused, but, kind of easy. So like you might be able to sleep to that or meditate or something like that. So we have two possibilities there. If you're feeling like you need to get going and have some coffee, we got one. And then the other one is like when you want to go to, just relax and have a meal or something.
So I'm hoping we could play clips of a number of these tracks for people to hear. We start with Brittany Haas, because she was featured on this podcast last year, and a lot of people, listeners, will
great
know her.
And Brittany is one of my long-term... I couldn't love Brittany anymore if she was my own freshman, but I think of her as a niece, or maybe even in some ways a daughter. She is just completely we're close, and she helped me produce the project. So, yeah, that's great that we're starting with Brittany, because, you know, she's really, the person that I feel the closest to.
Yeah, you've done a lot of producing over the years, that kind of careful listening. I was curious with this project, were they all recorded in the same spot or not?
Well, mostly it was here at my house. We just set up mics in the room, and because it's just two instruments, it worked fine. Just the two fiddles. We just threw blankets over the furniture and a couple of microphones, and we got it. And that was nice because we were able to hear each other really well. And so that worked out very well, except for this one with the big band, where that was during the pandemic. That kind of got the whole project started back in 2020 when we were all trapped in our houses. I was thinking, well, what can I do? And maybe, just like shoot some money to some of my fellow fiddle players. So I made a track of myself playing sort of a bass line to a fiddle tune, Liza Jane, Little Liza Jane, just good old fiddle tune. I decided to do it in kind of a second line style, so like a New Orleans parade style. So it's kind of a different feeling. And then I just sent the track out to 26 different fiddle players, all of whom, I have been, some kind of, relationship with. And I said, just listen, it was just me and a click, and they played to just me and that click, all of them, because I thought it would be unfair if, as people in the later parts, they had to deal with all these other tracks, and how are they going to think of to fit anything in? All these people have musical taste, right? So, all I listened to was me. So it's like this amazing thing where people are kind of feel like they have all the room in the world to kind of go crazy and do their stuff over this track. And when you put it all together, I don't even know how to describe it. You'd have to hear it. It's mind-boggling and really, I always get a new hairdo every time I listen to it because it just goes straight up. It's just fantastic. Just so beautiful. Really makes me happy. I think it's going to make a lot of people happy. It's very joyful. Sounds like a big parade.
It really does, and it's true. The first time I heard it, it really took me by surprise. I thought, "What is this? What's going on?" But right. Yeah, it's definitely a party. That must have been hard to produce that track, though.
Yeah, it's funny, and the irony is that it was just every people in the room by themselves recording. It's like recording everybody's garage or their bedroom or their basement. But it does sound like just a big, what we wanted to have.
Yeah. So speaking of the Liza Jane parade, unfortunately, Mike, when he recorded his track, shortly after that, he suffered from his aneurysm.
Yeah, it's Mike Barnett. Just shortly after. You know, he may have done some other things, but it might be, if not the last thing he did, you know, one of the last things he did when he had use of his left hand. So that's really, there's a very elegiac, you know, it's like, it's so joyful, and yet, you know, it's like being in a time machine, knowing what's going to happen. It's like, it's very upsetting, but his playing is so beautiful. That guy, Mike Barnett, is one of the most incredible talents, but it's not just talent. You know, he worked harder than anybody, and he was mastering, like, so many different styles of fiddling. You know, he was studying with Tatiana Hargreaves. They were going long distance back and forth. He was, you know, he was studying with her. He was studying with Billy Contreras, the great, you know, probably the most, you know, intensely, you know, technical jazz fiddle player ever, and just working on his music all the time. And you know, so it's really, you know, it's sad, but you know, any piece of you know, anything that he did is valuable, I think. And this particular, you know, we just broke the track out as a separate track, and so it's just me and him and his his accomplice, you know, Alex Hargreaves, who they went to Berkeley together, and they were together a lot, and they worked out all these great things. You can hear on Mike's his duets record. He has a duets record where the most intensely you know, just complicated Byzantine track is him and Alex just playing this amazing stuff together. So I thought, well, we better have Alex on there anyway, because Alex is doing a lot of beating rhythm. Anyway, so just the rhythm parts. So that worked out fantastically.
I understand Mike's gone through a lot of rehab. Like, he's doing pretty well.
He is doing a lot of, he is doing everything he possibly can and keeping in a positive attitude. You know, he lives here in Nashville as well. And, you know, we see him a bit. I'm probably going to be going over there this week and hanging out. He's working on all kinds of things. And I'm really, you know, I'm kind of after him to start doing more producing, you know, because I think he's got incredible ears, and it's something that he could do, I think. You know, he's just, you know, he hasn't lost a bit of his thinking ability. You know, he's everything. It's the only thing that's not there is his left hand, which really, you know, if it's a great day if he can turn a doorknob, you know. So that's tough, you know, that's a real tough thing. But, you know, I'm also suggesting, like, I might have to, like, buy him a Dobro or something, see if that, you know, maybe that'll do something. Who knows? I don't know. Just trying to keep a positive attitude about it. And you know, he's definitely still Mike, and he's on top of it, and he's working hard, you know.
Mm-hmm. Now, your style of playing, which, you know, combining bluegrass and jazz and many other styles of music, it, when you got into this, it wasn't like you developed a lot. So you dropped out of college way back. to play
my,
more, basically.
That's my little set piece. Is my big career decision was to drop out of college to play bluegrass music in pizza parlors. You know, but I was, you know, I was in the right place at the right time. I was in the San Francisco Bay Area at a time where it was cheap to live there. There's a lot of music, art, and all kinds of stuff going on. The technical guys, you know, all the Apple guys were in the garages, like, you know, soldering stuff together, and there was just a lot of creativity, you know, in that time. And I was kind of ruined for traditional, or like any kind of pure style, whatever that is. You know, pure style is what? Some combination, some very specific combinations of any amount of other styles. So really, you know, that's just kind of a shibboleth, to use one of my favorite words this week. But yeah, so I was, you know, I was really interested in the Beatles. That's the thing that got me into playing music in the first place. I'm of that demographic, that generation, where I was, must have been like, yeah, I must have been 10 or 11 years old when the Beatles hit, and that was it for me. You know, oh yeah, I want to play music. You know. So that just continued through my school years, and I didn't know fiddling or bluegrass existed until I was about like halfway through high school, and then I went to see a rock band. The Young Bloods, some people may remember the Young Bloods, Jesse, Colin Young, and they had a hit called Everybody Get Together, Try to Love One Another Right Now. Y'all get together. That didn't work, but it was a great song. And they had a song called Darkness, Darkness, which had a fiddle playing on the beginning of it. And I hadn't really heard that. I had taken classical violin lessons, but I was also into like Eric Clapton and the blues guitar players, Led Zeppelin stuff, all that kind of thing, Hendrix. I liked violin, and I was playing in the school orchestra, but I didn't connect it with any of the electric guitar stuff, which I was also interested in. And then I went and I saw... Well, the Youngbloods didn't have the fiddle player, because that was David Lindley playing in the studio with them. But the opening act was C-Train, which was a rock band with Peter Rowan, who was playing Telecaster, which was wild. Think of Peter Rowan, young Peter Rowan, playing Telecaster and doing all his yodeling and storytelling and all that stuff. And Richard Green playing just the most rocked out. He sounded like any of those great electric guitar players. He could play all that stuff, and fast, and, you know, he played Orange Blossom Special, and it was great, and, it just felt like a 14-year-old boy, you know, that's like, what else could you want, you know? So, I said, well, okay, yeah, well, there's already 200 guys ahead of me, just in my high school, on electric guitar, there's guys that can play both solos to Crossroads. You know, I can only play the first solo to Crossroads, you know. So, and that's, of course, that famous, Cream piece, you know, with Eric Clapton, it's Crossroads. If you can play, okay, can you play the first solo to Crossroads? You know, yeah, I can play that. You know, we can play the second. Well, I'm working on it, right? So, anyway, so I thought, well, you know, I already kind of have a bunch of stuff together on violin. I could just transfer all the stuff I've been doing on guitar over to violin, and I would have a niche. Nobody's doing that in my high school, right? So that was cool. And then, you know, just researching that and finding Richard Green stuff, I discovered bluegrass, and that was great because bluegrass was exciting, super rhythmic, you know, highly, you know, structured music that put a big premium on virtuosity and playing fast, you know? So... again, you know, for like a, you know, 14-year-old boy, you know, that's just, you know, that's it, you know, that's the thing. So, yeah, so working in all that stuff, so, right, and everything that I was listening to, just thinking, you know, I could do all this stuff on violin, cool, you know, and so when David Grisman came along with the Mule Skinner Band, which was not exactly bluegrass, and Old in the Way, which was bluegrass, but with a very, you know, kind of like, kind of a West Coast edge to it, you know, like Peter Rowan's compositions were about, you know, all kinds of things, you know, that, you know, it wasn't just about wanting to go to the little cabin by the lake or anything. There was like all kinds of stuff, you know, coded references to marijuana and all that stuff that we were, you know, into. And of course, John Hartford's incredible, you know, Aeroplane record with Vassar Clements, who Vassar played with everybody. You know, Vassar just was himself no matter what. And he, you know, he played with the Nitty Gritty Dirt Band. He was playing with rock bands, the Allman Brothers, you know, John Hartford. That was a model for me. That was just like, oh, okay, great. You know, and then my other, hero, Byron Berline, who was very kind to me early on in my career, was playing. He played on the Rolling Stones record, right? So this was all, you know, it's all part of the big, you know, pile of, you know, inspiring stuff. So that was what was happening in the 70s for me.
This name Byron, I didn't know who that was.
Byron Berline. Great. You know, started as a Texas fiddle player and somehow, like for some reason, moved to Los Angeles in the late 60s, early 70s, and he became a session player. Anytime anybody needed a fiddle for anything, you know, they'd call Byron. And Byron, you know, had cred up the wazoo. He, you know, his dad, Lou Berline, was a, you know, national fiddle contest winner. Byron went and won the contest, you know, went with his dad the first time. And, you know, he was just one of those great Texas fiddle players, a great, great Texas. And his sound was so incredible. It was sounded like an electric violin, you know, that kind of sound. People describe, I think it was like bone conduction, you know, where it sounds like the sound is inside your head. Also, Vassar Clements had that sound where it just, you know, it just grabs you. You know, you can't not listen.
You mentioned Richard Green. Now, it was his influence that got you to figure out chopping?
Yes. Richard invented the chop in 1964 when Richard was playing with Bill Monroe, King of Bluegrass. So, and nobody else was doing it yet, and I just thought that was the coolest thing you could possibly do. I, you know, what I was doing, I was playing, well, guitar, and, you know, playing chords on guitar, and also in my school orchestra, I was usually last chair, second violin, sometimes first chair, second violin, but always second violin, never first. So we were playing all, you know, inner parts and accompaniment parts. And that's kind of what I liked, you know, it's what I was kind of used to. And so the chop was like, oh man, yeah, I can play, you know, I can play accompanying parts and do all this stuff. And Richard showed it to me. I don't think it took me very long to get it, probably about half hour or something like that. And, you know, and then just kind of using it as an accompaniment thing, because we were playing in bands that didn't have any drums. Sometimes you just need to, and somebody would need to hit a backbeat. It's just how it is, because, you know, rhythm is the most, if you don't have rhythm in music, then you don't have danceability, and then you don't have social music, and then, you know, it's just, you got to have it. For me, it's an essential element of music.
Yeah. Well, all your music is so groove-based. I even went back and listened to, like, Diary of a Fiddler from 1978. And I certainly, when I was in my late teens, early 20s, I was listening to the Turtle Island String Quartet.
Oh, cool.
And
oh, that's great.
Tracy Silverman was one of my early guests on this podcast. I'll actually link his episode to this. So, of course, we talked about all the listening you had him doing, expanding his horizons, chopping, and all that.
Tracy is such a genius, and you know, he, when I showed him the chop, I mean, he was one of those people who got it instantly, and then has developed a whole didact, you know, like a whole program, you know, that really kind of takes it apart and says, well, how do you, you know, why would you do it, how do you do it? Very, you know, one of the smartest people and one of the greatest violinists. That guy doesn't even, you know, it's not, he doesn't know how good he is. He knows how good he is, but he just doesn't care, you know? He'll just play whatever is needed. I just can't say enough good stuff about Tracy. Love that guy.
Yeah, so he plays a six-string electric violin for people who haven't heard him, but you normally play, do you play a five-string normally, Daryl?
I do play a five-string acoustic, yeah.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, as far as how long I've been playing, which just, I just clocked over, I just, the little clock ticked over at 60 this year, 60 years playing the violin or some kind of violin-shaped object. And, yeah, you know, who had the five-string acoustic was basically invented pretty much by Johnny Gimble, right? And then who was the great swing, Texas swing violinist, who has played with everybody from Willie Nelson on down. And in fact, I think he even played with oh man, some of those original Texas Swing guys. And then I heard Bobby Hicks was the next guy to drill a hole in his violin peg head and put an extra peg in there and have five strings. So Bobby did that, and then it kind of, nothing happened for a long time. And then a fellow started building these things in Illinois, a guy named John Silikowski. And then, once there were like fiddles that were available, the gates kind of opened up. So the first person that I was playing with was Brittany. She had a five string almost from the beginning. And I'm going, man, that's great. That's a really cool five string. I like that. I'm not a big fan of the high strings anyway. I want to go low. But it took me a while to find something that sounded like myself. One of the things that, people say, well, are you a virtuoso? And for me, I'm not really a virtuoso. I'm a stylist. I have a sound that I kind of can't help sounding like myself. I'm a bad imitator. I'm a pretty good, and I worked pretty hard to stay connected, to my heart and my music, and when I'm playing, just put it out there, like what I'm feeling. So that's not always good, because if you're feeling bad, you're getting, you gotta buck it up, so that's what's going on with that. So, if you pick an instrument, it's got to sound like you. And so it was hard. It took a while to find a five string, but I love the five string. I have a four string, like Hanukkah Castle says. You mean a four string fiddle? You mean a violin? Which is, of course, like violins have four strings, for the last 200 years. Although, there is a five-string fiddle, violin, dated 1689 in the Metropolitan Museum of Art. You may know about this, Leah. You're nodding. Maybe you know about that. But it's like, what happened? What went on there? Somebody made a five-string, and it just looks like a regular five string. It's like a, got all the attributes of a modern violin.
Somebody I interviewed was playing with a fiddler, and they were playing a Baroque five string violin. So I had looked it up, so I was familiar with this.
Yeah. So, a lot of this is probably, it's just, when people got in orchestras and the orchestras got bigger, the parts had to be standardized. People were playing stuff, custom orders, but if you had half the people with four strings, half the people with five strings, how do you, write a part for, it doesn't make sense. So, things got standardized when the orchestras got big.
Well, unless you're a double bass player.
Yeah, right, yeah. The three-string basses and all that stuff.
Apparently a lot of them have five strings, and it's a thing now. Yeah. Anyway, let's get back to this album. So I'm probably not pronouncing names. So is it Enion or Enion Pelta?
Enion Pelta. I'm going to just grab my copy here.
Yeah.
I happen to have I think I'm in good with the guy that made this, and I got an advanced copy. Let's see. Okay. Yeah, Enion Pelta, who is actually one of the older players on this. She came for some lessons back in maybe like late 1990s or something like that, and just a great, great fiddle player, and who's living in Colorado and is doing a lot of things now. She's had a band, this band that's sort of, it's kind of a Eastern European grass band. They do a lot of, it's called Tarka, and she's just one of those people that, she can play anything. She can play bluegrass, she can play jazz, she can play Eastern European stuff. She's actually getting in with the University of Colorado there in, or maybe it's Colorado State. Anyway, it's in Denver, and she's starting to run a string program, roots string program there. She's just a terrific musician, and I love playing with her. She's one of those people that can play. She can do. Like, she can imitate me better than I can imitate myself. She's really funny, but you know, it's not. She does a lot of things really well. Yeah, that was fun because that was a very. She picked out. So the whole thing was like, I didn't want to pay royalties because I knew there was going to be a lot of material on this. To, you know, so it's all my compositions, which is, you know, it's fine. It was kind of fun because digging up, you know, what composition would work with which person, you know, that I was matching things to people. Some people chose the piece that they wanted to do, and Enya chose this crazy sort of Middle Eastern tune. I'm going to try to write one of those Middle Eastern tunes where everybody plays the melody together, and it's just like, and it's got funny notes in it and stuff. So she liked that, and she played the crap out of it. She's just a great improviser, and that was really fun because there was a lot of just, that's on the loud CD, you know, because she just kind of tore it up. And actually, she's great. She did a couple of things that nobody else did on the record. She did a kind of a finger-picking thing at the beginning and some other stuff. I remember part of her solo was one of those things where it sounds like feedback and just like a kind of like it was sort of an elephant and some rhinos and feedback all together. So it was very, you know, kind of African-sounding, I guess. You know?
I mean, what I find listening to this album, there is just so much variety and color to it, even though it's like, you know, just a couple of string instruments, but...
That's great to hear, you know, because really, you know, if you're talking like, you know, mostly just two fiddles, you know, you really have to, you know, like that could be so deadly, you know. So I really, you know, I'm, that's always been something where when I'm writing music, I'm writing in different styles that occur to me, and that's just something that happens. So we were able to, we worked with that, and of course people sound different too, and everybody's got their proclivities. So thank you, Leah. I'm glad, you know, I was hoping, you know, that's what I was going for, you know, it's like enough variety to make it feel like, you know, it was worth, you know, if you didn't just get tired, you know. I mean, you still have to, you really have to like fiddling. you have to like fiddles to like this record. But it's, you know, there, I'm glad, yeah, thank you for that. I'm glad that it feels like there's enough variety.
Okay. So if we could get into your teaching a little bit, you know, not like Berklee was a huge thing, and also your online artist works. Where do you want to start? Hi, just a quick break from the episode. I wanted to let you know about some other episodes I've linked directly to this one with Martin Hayes, Tracy Silverman, Brittany Haas, Joe K. Walsh, Leslie DeShazor, Julie Lyon Lieberman, and Sarah Caswell. It's a joy to be able to bring these meaningful conversations to, but this project cost me quite a bit of money and lots of time. Please support this series through either my merchandise store or on my Ko-fi page. You'll find the links in the show notes. For the merch, it features a unique design by artist Steffi Kelly, and you can browse clothes, notebooks, mugs, and more, everything printed on demand. On my Ko-fi page, you can buy me one coffee or every month. You'll also find the link to sign up for my newsletter, where you'll get access to exclusive information about upcoming guests. Finally, if you're finding this episode interesting, please text it to a friend. Thanks. Now, back to Daryl.
Yeah, well, maybe the online thing, you know, because it's ongoing. I've been doing that for, you know, maybe like 13, 14 years now. Doing an online fiddle school with a company called ArtistWorks, which is nice that they're doing it. You know, a lot of people are doing their own programs now, and it just seems like so much work. And I'm still trying to, like, get out and tour and play and record my own stuff and write music and have a garden. So having a company sort of do a lot of the work there is cool, and especially because it's very, there's a technical thing that's very cool about it. You can actually, if you sign up, it's a subscription model. If you sign up for this, you can actually record yourself with your phone and upload your little recording of you playing something into the site, and then I respond to that personally. Maybe in a few days or a couple of weeks later, you get a personal response from me about, you know, about what you're doing and how you're doing it. And that's some of the other, you know, some of the other companies' online lesson things don't do that. You know, it's just sign up for a lot. You get all these lessons, and they're great, but you're kind of struggling through it on your own. So that's kind of a good thing. I'm liking that, and it just keeps going on. And I've developed a, you know, kind of a nice relationship with a lot of folks who've been on it for, like, you know, 5 or 6 years, and they make progress. You know, it's great. Yeah, a lot of dear friends. And when I go play, you know, shows, you know, some of those folks will show up, and then I get to meet them in person, and it's always great. So that's cool. And then I spent 10 years at Berklee College of Music in Boston.
Before we get into Berklee, I just wanted to follow up with ArtistWorks. Yeah, because I talked to Brittany about it as well. I mean, I had done a little bit of video feedback with people, like, early in the pandemic who were in different time zones. I find it a hard thing to do, and I was wondering if you get a little overwhelmed because there's so many people that you're working with. And
yeah, well, you know, there's other folks, friends of mine, who are, you know, also run programs on ArtistWorks. Mike Marshall, the mandolin player, Tony Trischka, the banjo player, and, you know, guitar player, Brian Sutton, the guitar player. We're all in kind of the same kind of bluegrass category at ArtistWorks. And, you know, Mike especially, I think, you know, he gets a lot of people. I think the fiddle players are a little more shy, so not everybody is going to make a video of themselves, because it's, you know, it's bad enough to hear yourself on tape, but to see yourself on video trying to play, I know that it's kind of miserable for me, because I make faces when I'm playing. And it's just, you know, from 30 feet away in a show, you know, it's not that bad, but if you're right up on a camera, it's, you know, so I get a regular, you know, I just have to stay on top of it, you know, but, like, you know, every week I just go in and do 5 or 6 or 8 or 12 or, you know, 17 or, but, you know, you just, that's the thing. I mean, it's usually the submissions are only about three or four minutes. And then what's nice is I can watch those a few times and really zone into what's going on, you know. You know, I don't have to just make a spot judgment, you know, because it's a lesson, we got to get out of there in 45 minutes. It's also nice for both the student and the teacher, because you can do this at three in the morning in their basement if you want. You know, you don't have to make an appointment. That's the worst for me, having to make an online appointment. It's, I always miss them. I almost missed this one, as a matter of fact, but Sharon, my wife, you know, reminded me, and so I was able to clean up. I was out digging in the garden. So, yeah, so that's nice. You know, it's kind of an on-demand thing in some ways. You know, all those lessons, you can just take them anytime, and then, you know, the exchange thing is also kind of, it's, you know, you can listen. It's always there, no matter what time it is. And so people with kids or, you know, schedules, people with lives can fit this stuff in the cracks. And you can just do it for 15 minutes or, you know, whatever length you want at any time. So that's a great thing.
And your wife, Sharon, she plays banjo and bass?
She is a bass player and a mandolin player. She's great.
Oh, mandolin, no.
Great mandolin player, yeah. She, you know, Sharon and I both have the distinction of having played in bands with Tony Rice, which a lot of your viewers may know that name, because he's kind of one of those guitar gods. You know, he's up in the Pantheon with Django Reinhardt and Eric Clapton and those folks. Yeah, very intense experience. Sharon's got a mandolin program on the competing platform, Peghead Nation, which, you know, but she doesn't have to do the interactions, you know. All she just makes these great lessons. She's an amazing teacher.
Okay, so if we could jump over to your years at Berklee.
Oh, yeah. Well, I was at Berklee from like 2007 to 2017, or maybe 2008 to 2000, whatever it was. It was amazing times. 10 years of having a day job, but it was probably the best day job a musician, professional musician, could have, because basically you did almost 40 hours, but they were compressed into 2 days. I'd get there at 8 in the morning and have private lessons like until about 9 at night, and do that for maybe more like 20 hours a week, but whatever it was, it felt like 400 some weeks. You finish up at 9, you know, like really all these kids, I mean, most of them were kids in the sense of being under 21, but you do get some adults, people in their late 20s who want to go back and really complete their education. They just want to get serious about music. But the cream, like just the best music, it's Berklee, you know, it's got a worldwide reputation. And so I'd get these kids that were coming in, they were like playing, you know, I mean, as far as like the number of notes, like if you wanted to like, just like a note count, you know, per minute, you know, if you could get if you wanted 800 notes per minute or something like that, these kids could do it, you know. So a lot of it was just kind of reminding people like why we do stuff, why we play music, and because these kids are coming out of like things where they've been practicing like crazy just to get into Berklee. And then, you know, maybe they're the best in their neighborhood, you know, and their mom thinks they're a genius, and they maybe are a genius, but all of a sudden they're plopped into the school with all the other geniuses from every other neighborhood, and they're going like, ah, oh God, you know, I'm not special anymore, I better practice my butt off, you know. And then that's when you get hand injuries and things like that. So trying to keep people centered, you know, and sane is a big part of the Berklee experience. Just trying to remind them, you know, what they're doing, and keep them coming back to themselves and why, you know, what they're doing. And some of these kids, I'm thinking about people like Ella Jordan and John Mylander, who are on the record. Ella came from a musical, her sister, and she played Texas swing and Texas fiddling. They came straight from Texas to Boston. And John, I'd known a little bit before that. He came from San Diego, also a brilliant fiddle player. But they were all asking questions like, well, why would you want to play all these weird notes against a seventh chord? Like, what is that? What does that do? And those are the questions you want to hear. Even though it brought me up short, I felt like, oh, well, you just assume that that's why you're here, right? You're here at Berkeley, so you can play a bunch of weird notes against a seventh chord. I'm going like, well, what are we saying when we play, you know, a B flat and a C natural against an A chord, which has those particular notes are just like a half step away from the notes that are in the arpeggio, right? And sometimes, you know, in jazz, right, the thing is you're never more than a half step away from the right note. But sometimes a half step away is the farthest you can possibly get from the right note, right? So, like, what is the, you know, and it was so great. I said, John, you just asked the question of the, you know, that it's the most important question, one of the most important questions in music. It's like, why do we want to play these funny notes? And it's because, are we saying, what are we saying? Are we saying, I'm smart? Are we saying, I know a bunch of stuff? What is it? You know, so that's the meat. You know, this is where I was trying to get there with everybody, you know, whether or not they were studying jazz. You know, there's a lot of those folks. The only note of jazz that they probably played was maybe in school, you know, and they are not playing jazz now, but they are improvising, which is really cool. Jana Moynihan, one of the great Celtic fiddle players of all time. I don't care who you put, you know, she is just so incredible. You know, it's just hearing her is like hearing all the fiddle players put together in one, and it's this beautiful, you know, just so perfection. It's personified, you know. It's just a beautiful, beautiful player. So, yeah, I mean, I got her playing, like, you know, some seventh chords a little bit, you know, but mostly it was just trying to get, just, you know, getting relaxed, you know, just playing, like, being able to just play something off the top of your head, right? Just improvising in general, you know, whatever style you're playing in. Just enjoy it, you know. So a lot of it was just, you know, playing together in a positive emotional and mental environment, just like we're doing on this record. And that was the program, you know.
Mm-hmm. And in terms of interaction with the other faculty, Berkeley's must have changed a lot over the years. Like, Joe K. Walsh was also on this podcast. I think he was like, when he was there wasn't really a mandolin program as there is now.
Yeah, right. There really wasn't. And they had just hired a great mandolin player, John McGann, who is, might be a familiar name to some folks. He has some Rounder records out on Rounder. And he was definitely a beloved figure there at Berkeley. It's a small string faculty, but super supportive. You know, there's the joke about, you know, like, college faculties in general, you know, like, why is there so much backbiting and backstabbing and, you know, just like, horrible feelings going on in academia. You know, it's because the stakes are so low. And but that was I just feel so lucky to have such a positive experience. Mimi Rapson, Rob Thomas, Matt Glazer, who really put the thing together, Melissa Howe. I thank all those folks on the record. There's a lot of thank yous going on. These kind of Pied Piper types like Matt Glazer and Alistair Fraser, who really, just draw young people in to this world, where they can have meaningful emotional and physical interactions with other people of any age, including their own age, without the weirdness. It's just, intense, meaningful interactions with other people through music that you don't always get. How do you get that? Something where, you can sit at a cafe and talk about life and have a real good, intense conversation. But when you add in, just getting in sync with another person and at so many different levels, it's not just breath, it's heart rhythm, it's thinking about, it's thinking, what is that other person going to do? How am I going to make that better, it's a conversation where both people are talking at once. That's amazing, And you make something that's bigger than just the sum of its parts. And that's just, it's uncanny and beautiful and I don't know if I'd even still be alive without music. So there you go.
You know, you've toured a lot over the years. Do you want to talk a little bit about playing challenges or, there's different staying relaxed. We talked about avoiding injury. Do you want to get into any of that?
Oh, yeah, sure. The fiddle, all these string instruments, cello, fiddle, anything, a bowed string instrument is just the learning curve is pretty steep at the beginning. It's hard at the beginning. And then in the middle, you've played for a few years. It's also hard and kind of steep, and if you've been playing a long time, it's also hard. It's just hard all the time. It's you have to stay in shape. It's like I'm kind of this is a thing that I've been thinking about, the idea that a fretted instrument, right, with got all the lines and dots, it's sort of like a contract, right? Because you've signed a contract up here at the peg head, and then, everything was going to follow. If you get it right here, if you get everything worked out, then you can kind of trust that everything up here is going to happen properly. You just throw your fingers down. But with a violin, it's just a big, or cello, right? It's just a big blank, black space, right? And so, with the fretted instrument, it's like civilization, but with the violin, you kind of have to kill your own food and build a fire to cook it, every time you want to eat, right? It's like the wild. You're always out there, kind of constructing your own reality, installing the frets every time you play. So it's kind of like, I feel kind of this sort of, like there's a tribe of kind of crazy people who, you know, just persist, and, you know, like we're, you know, just pursuing perfection, because you can get, like, the possibility of getting perfectly in tune on a bowed instrument, the possibility is there, somewhere out there it's there. You can sort of maybe get there someday for a minute, you know. So pursuing that, you know, and of course the range of expression is very wide. I mean, that's one of the great things. And I'm really, you know, I'm pretty, you know, proud. Like you mentioned, there is a lot of variation in the way people sound, what, you know, how, what we're doing, the range of sounds. That was part of the original thing with the Diary of a Fiddler, was the original cut, was I kind of just playing around with accompaniment to all these great fiddle players, and, you know, like, well, what can you do? You know, all the different things that you can do to make a complete sound, you know, just like suggest the sound of bass, drums, piano, guitar, whatever, with just, you know, with just a violin, or just a, you know, viola, or a baritone violin, which is lower than a viola but higher than a cello. And since then, I've gotten in this baritone violin that is the same as a cello. It's the same range as a cello, except it's got an E string, which the cellos are all hate me for. And that's a great thing, too, because then you have a much wider, you know, range of so I can play, like, bass notes and things like that with that instrument. So that's fun. About half the record is me playing that baritone five-string violin, and that's cool. So that helps, you know, make more variation in the sound.
Yeah, you'd mentioned earlier, like in your first Diary of a Fiddler, that Martin Hayes was on it, the Irish fiddler.
Yes, yeah, so, I kind of had the Celtic connection. It was so cool because I. You know, I don't consider myself a Celtic player. You know, I'm not very good at it. You know, I've been working on it. Jenna has been helping me, actually. Jenna Moynihan. I just get, like, kind of balled up in the little squiggly doos and the squiggly das. You know, all that, those little ornaments that are so beautiful when they're played right, and they're so annoying when they're not. She just keeps telling me, well, just relax, you know, and I'm going like, I'm trying to, you know, right, so, yeah, it's, so I don't really, but I love the style, and I can, like, make a frame, and that was beautiful, because I did two things with Martin. We did a version of the, like, a Beatles tune, which was so beautiful, because Martin, he's got that lonesome sound. He says it himself. You know, it's just that beautiful, wistful thing. And so when you put something like, I Get By With a Little Help From My Friends, it's a very, you know, it's sad and it's happy at the same time. You know, it's just one of those indescribable songs. And then we also did, and I didn't know this at the time, I asked Martin to play Banish Misfortune, which is sort of like the Celtic players. It's kind of like Rocky Top or something. You know, it's like, yeah, it's, or Orange Blossom Special. One of those tunes that, oh, nobody plays that tune. It's so dumb. You know, we don't play. That's like, you know, nobody plays that tune. It's overplayed. You know, so yeah, but Martin. But I had kind of a really, you know, more interesting arrangement for it. We changed keys. I had a kind of like a pretty fancy, a lot of plucking and bouncing the bow accompaniment. And Martin, he said, well, normally I don't play that tune, but with you I will do that, you know. And I'm like, wow, oh, thanks, man. Okay, and it worked, of course. If you don't want it. So those kind of things. And then, of course, I got to play with Alistair Fraser, the great Scottish fiddle, and that guy is, you know, again, one of the most influential fiddle players in history, I think. You know, he's really gone beyond. He's, like, spun a whole, like, three or four now generations of post-Celtic fiddle player, people that have a strong roots in Celtic music, but are playing all kinds of music, pop music, everything. The guy is just, you know, such an inspiration. So we just played. We just sat down. We didn't have any plan at all. And we wound up playing some weird, crazy stuff. He picked up this crazy instrument made by a fellow named Danny Farrington, who makes custom, you know, acoustic guitars for the stars in the shape of whatever. You can make a guitar in the shape of a teacup, or in the shape of the country music star's swimming pool, you know, or whatever. So he made this crazy shape violin that can't even be tuned up to pitch, because it's just like a little cockle shell. It's just made out of like really thin wood. It's just got this crazy shape. Half of it is missing, but it still sounds cool. And so Alistair picked that up and was like, oh, I will play this. You know, let's goof around on this. And so we wound up playing some crazy, like a Strathspey, which is kind of a march, like kind of a martial march kind of thing. And we just turned it into this crazy, you know, like just blowout, you know, jam that went on and on. And yeah, so he's a real, you know, inspiration to me. So yeah, I played a duet with Natalie McMaster, who is, you know, Celtic in the sense that it's, you know, yeah, it's like maybe the original Scottish fiddling from Cape Breton. Natalie is, super inspiring to me. She, you know, I think she brings out, you know, I wrote a tune just for her to play, with me, and you know, I think it's one of my better tunes ever. You know, she's just so great and a beautiful personality. You probably interviewed her. I don't know. She's just so wonderful.
Yeah, I haven't, but she plays with our orchestra quite often here in Ottawa.
Oh, fantastic! That's great.
But Martin, my interview with Martin Hayes, I have to say, is one of my most listened to interviews on this podcast. It was great, and he played quite a bit too.
Cool. Oh, he's so articulate and, yeah, just very highly, you know, violent and highly evolved fella. That's how I see Martin.
Yeah, I'll link that too so people can check it out. So I've made lists, you know, there's so many tracks on this album and I don't want to leave people out, but if there's things you definitely want to include.
Yeah, there's a lot, I know.
Yeah.
Casey Dreeson, who is kind of the link to the original Diary. He was on the original right at the end, right? It was like he and Hanukkah Castle were like, you know, the Young Turks, and we did a thing. I recorded that, wow, somewhere up in Vermont, somewhere in a big hall, empty hall. And so, yeah, I had to get Casey because he's done so much with the Chop, and I had this great sort of, gospel, like kind of a, yeah, like a gospel tune kind of thing. And it just was perfect. I was so proud of how that turned out. Casey really worked on it, and we had, you know, quite a bit of it is like through composed, it's written. And then, of course, we played our solos back and forth and did a couple of mutual solos. But the ins and outs are very highly, you know, arranged. He just learned it, and man, it was just great. I love working with Casey because he's so methodical and works really hard. And yeah, we get a good blend, you know, with the baritone and his five string.
Go. Thank you.
So, do you want to talk about Emmy Phelps?
I was with Emmy for the 10 years that I was in Boston teaching, and she, you know, I think, you know, she's obviously a musical genius and one of those, you know, kind of invisible virtuosos who was, just could kind of do anything you needed to do on the instrument. Great musical memory, you know. I never had to worry about whether she would remember it. We were doing all these really complicated arrangements. I never had to worry about whether she would remember the arrangement. She remembered them better than I did. Really the first vocalist that I was able to work with in a meaningful way. One of the greatest singers, you know, I think, that I've ever heard, really. Just a beautiful, extremely complicated, and very deep person who I miss terribly every day. I'm glad we were able to make recordings, but and like in the sense of a record, documents of the music, you know, that we were able to make. You know, we've got three. This is 5 years now since she passed away, and this was the first year I've actually been able to even just listen to she passed away on the solstice, June 22nd of 2020. And so, yeah, this last solstice, a couple of weeks ago now, we're just gotten into July here of 2025, I think. Still 2020, yeah, 5 years later. I was able to listen to some of the, you know, some of the records and just not completely come apart. But yeah, I just can only be grateful that, you know, we were able to be together for, basically about 11 years. So
I'm so sorry for your loss. I hadn't heard of her, but then I listened to your albums and her albums because they're right on your Bandcamp. So that was a wonderful discovery to know about her.
Yeah. Like, she'll just take you to the deepest place. And, yeah, definitely. And you know, just lucky to have, you know, been able to be around her, you know, for the time that I was.
And Daryl, your tune, the Crooked Road to Emmy, was that written for her?
Yeah, you know, she made a recording. You know, we spent some time at the Grand Targhee Festival, and she just kind of audited Daryl Scott's songwriting class, and of course she was totally the star. And of course she felt bad about that because you know, other people had paid, and people, you know, Emmy had been doing it for so long, and because Daryl just kind of latched onto her as, you know, somebody who he could, you know, work with as an example for, you know, like the other people in the class and all this stuff. And she wrote a great song about her father in that class that is incredible. Daryl Scott's he's a genius and a great songwriter, and she decided to cut one of Daryl Scott's songs, which is, you know, The Crooked Road, which is a beautiful song about, you know, I walk a crooked road. I realized that, you know, looking back at my life, you know, it was the straight and narrow for me, even though it was a crooked road. It was, you know, all these beautiful ideas about, you know, trying to do what you do and being yourself, all the themes that Emmy's so obsessed with anyway. And so she said, well, yeah, we should have a fiddle tune, you know, to go with this. You know, should we come out of this tune with a fiddle tune? So can you write one? And so basically I wrote that tune, The Crooked Road, which is basically, it's based on the Buffalo Gals. If you think about it, it's kind of like, it's the same chords as Buffalo Gals. And sort of a, you know, if you did a Canadian style Texas melody to Buffalo Gals, it would probably sound like that. It's got a little crooked thing in it. It's got an extra beat, so it's crooked in the sense that, you know, we talk about fiddle tunes as being crooked if they have odd numbers of beats or bars. And so that, you know, that's always going to be connected to Emmy in my mind, you know, that tune. And so I played it with Tristan Claridge, another, you know, former student who I've worked with forever, who is also very, he and his sister, Tashina, are, you know, were very tight with Emmy Phelps. You know, they lived close by, and Emmy would put them up. You know, they would do house concerts at Emmy's house when Emmy was living in Ashland, Oregon. And so we both have a very strong connection, like a independent but super strong connection to Emmy. So it made sense for me and Tristan. You can hear it. You know, you can hear the love in that one, because we both miss her.
In terms of your current projects, so you're playing with Mr. Sun?
Yeah.
What a great
group. Mr. Sun is in his 12th year. Yeah, well, Mr. Sun is my, you know, main band and has been for 12 years. I love it. I love that band. I think it's ironic that I would probably, you know, like, still be playing in, you know, the same format, violin, mandolin, guitar, bass. Because that's kind of, you know, the band that I kind of started with, right? You know, well, two mandolins, you know, the David Grisman band, you know, was basically that format. But these guys are not only at the top of their, you know, field, you know, they're all, you know, some of the best players ever, but they're fully individuated. You can tell exactly who's playing, you know, and that's, and with me, I mean, that's kind of my thing too. So we have this, it's just a, you know, you can tell it's Mr. Sun, like, bam, you know. And we just, we're good friends. We love each other. And you know, there's all the usual stuff in a relationship. There's, you know, little, you know, annoyances and things like that. But basically, we are just committed. We love playing together, and the music is, it's just, there's nothing like it, you know. So I love that group. We've recorded another record, which will come out in a few months. I don't know when, but it's, I don't know. I'm trying to think of something I could wrap up here, you know, as far as the record, which is, I'm just so excited about it coming out. And it really feels like sort of a valedictory kind of project. It's, you know, it's kind of, I feel like, it's something that I'm proud of, you know, that I was able to work with all these incredible musicians. And, you know, I certainly don't take I don't take responsibility for the way they sound or anything like that. You know, they sound like themselves. When they showed up, they sounded like themselves, and they were already great. But I feel like I didn't mess anything up with them. And we had a great time. And I think that, you know, if you're, you know, just being able to play this, it's a lot of improvising, you know, just playing together, just these sort of open musical conversations that just go wherever they go. And there's some really, like, magical moments, you know, especially in the endings. You know, some of the endings, we just kept going until it ended, and we didn't even know it was going to end, and then all of a sudden this perfect moment happened. Happened again and again. So just, you know, these kind of just lovely, you know, just little episodes of life where two people who, you know, really, you know, have mutual respect and love are interacting in a musical way, and according to their, you know, individual personalities. It's just a beautiful thing, and I just feel so lucky to be, you know, be able to make music in that way. You know, that's kind of what it's about for me, you know, life and everything. And so, if this was, and I hope it's not going to be the last project I ever do, but if it was, I would be fine. You know, I could leave. Anyway, so that's it.
I really want to thank you for taking the time to do this today.
Oh, Leah, it's been a pleasure, and thank you so much for, you know, making this happen. I really enjoyed talking. I know I've been talking a lot, so
that's the idea. But I'm curious. You were gardening right before this. What are you growing out there?
Oh, you know, it's Tennessee down here, and you can just grow just about anything. Right now, the tomatoes are coming up. They're doing pretty well. We got green ones. Okra, of course, since it's the South, you know, you got to grow some okra, and peppers, a lot of different peppers. Growing some, I'm not a big fan of hot peppers, but I do like these Cubanelles, which are really good. They grow well here, and you just pick them when they're really small and then fry them up. And then some poblanos, which are always nice. I just put in a bunch of squash, different sizes of squash, so hoping to get some really good squash plants going, because we're going to want to eat a lot of that stuff this summer. So, yeah, just kind of standard stuff. Not a huge garden, but big enough to make a difference.
How do you deal with the okra? How do you cook it? Do you pickle it?
Oh, you know, I like pickled okra. Sharon doesn't. But, you know, if you just fry them, you know, they're okay, you know. They're like, if you can, like, even you can just bread them or just dry fry them, they're not so disgusting. You know?
I hope you enjoyed this episode. Please share this with your friends and check out episodes you may have missed at leahroseman.com. If you could buy me a coffee to support this series, that would be wonderful. I'm an independent podcaster, and I really do need the help of my listeners. All the links are in the show notes. The podcast theme music was written by Nick Cold. Have a wonderful week.